Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK, Historic Fisk University. And I have, last hour did not mention that What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. And we continue to roll this Wednesday afternoon down the information highway here on WFSK, and going to get our community news segment this hour straight and directly from the community. And Mia J. See, I got a granddaughter named Maya, y'all, so I'm gonna go back and forth, okay? just let me call her Precious. Mia J. And is with me right now too. And you know, if I don't get everybody's name absolutely perfect, just remember some of y'all never got mine perfect either. And my love for the audience and what you do is what is really up front. Now, I discovered this when I got my emails recent, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really lovely. I'm very familiar with the Black Lives Matter Nashville and some of the members of the organization. So I'm always watching for what they're doing. And Mia is the person that is going to respond when I requested somebody to tell us about this activity you have coming up that I think a lot of our people would definitely enjoy, simply because it's about art and things of that nature. And we know some of our listening audience is just as artsy as they want to be. So, Mia, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. And I am hoping that you're enjoying this day. I don't know if it is hot out there, because I haven't stepped out since this morning, but I hope that you're enjoying this August day as you prepare for an upcoming event on August 31st. And this sounds interesting and fun. Tell us more about this call for submissions for the Black Third Space.
Yeah. So BLM Nashville, we have just launched this new art program called Black Third Space, which is something that I have been envisioning, trying to work through how it could really fit, how it could apply and be useful for the movement space. And it just kind of clicked recently that I felt that it was time for it now. We launched it last week, and it is a virtual kind of call for artistic expression, and it will be an ongoing thing. The first exhibition that we'll do will be in September on Instagram, and the call for submissions is open right now until August 31st. We're asking for all types of art, you know, painting, digital illustration, poetry, you know, film, anything, you know, that you feel is expressive, that captures the spirit of Black Third Space, that is, you know, transcending limitations of time and space and location, and speaks to what is so powerful about the technology of blackness, the technology of our survival as a people, then please send it in. I think it's going to be something special. We've gotten some really beautiful things already.
I imagine. Now, this is open to anyone who is artistically inclined or knows someone that is, that will have a submission for you all. As you get the submissions, is it like a committee of people like yourself, or what's some of the criteria for receiving it?
Right, so myself and the other folks that are working on Black Third Space will work as a curating team to go through the submissions and decide, you know, what pieces will be shown when, what pieces can be shown if there's too many. And it is very open. There's not really disqualifying factors, no. We have requirements for the submission as far as we need a name and we need a title and a specific file type, but that's about it.
Now, because sometimes people have a problem with the word Black Lives Matter, and they're largely not black people, but those that do, have you received any kind of feedback, or why are you saying black? Well, white lives matter too. I mean, so do they get it, or what? This early stage of the game?
We always do. Yeah. I don't know when we won't. I will say that I think that this summer, these uprisings that we've seen, you know, across the nation, since then, there has been a general, you know, with the general public, a greater understanding of, you know, Black Lives Matter, and more people that aren't even, you know, a part of the organization have been able to handle answering that question than before. You know, certainly than a few years ago with the Ferguson uprisings, there are more people I have seen being able to address that question when it's being asked. And I've certainly seen, well, at least in the beginning of the summer, you could see an uptick of a greater number of white and non-black allies participating. That was interesting to notice. I don't know how much that had to do with, you know, the other state of events with, you know, quarantine and everything. But, yeah, we definitely still get it. I don't know that we'll ever stop, but.
Yeah. Well, at some point, you know, we hope that, like music, art, you know, can help heal some of the wounds that folks are having and, you know, erase some of that ignorance and hate. You know what I'm saying? Hello.
Sorry. My phone broke up.
Okay. No, I'm saying I'm hoping that this art that people send you, the submissions, you know, can help to heal some of the wounds and that, you know, people are feeling and get rid of some of that hate, you know?
And so that's what is at the heart of this is so much of this work, this movement work is emotionally, physically, mentally draining, right? You know, it is hard to do. It is hard to do the actual work that you're doing, but it's also hard to answer the questions and handle, you know, the racist folks that don't understand and think that you are, you know, evil, right? And it can be really hard to find a way to balance and center yourself and to center healing and to center joy. And this, why it's called Black Third Space is I was thinking about how space is defined in sociology, in urban sociology, in tri-level, right? And so first, space is the physical, measurable and mappable. Second, space is thoughts and ideas. And then third, space is something unique. It only happens in societies where there is oppression and colonization. And it is made up of social and lived experiences. And it is an attempt to push beyond the limitations of first and second space. And it has been really important historically as an area where movement work, specifically non-government movement work, has happened. However, in our country, of course, third space and third places have been racist, have been anti-Black. And that is the most important movement work that we have to do in this country. And, you know, with BLM, what we do all the time is about space. You know, it's about defending and protecting the first space, the physical space of Black Nashville. It's about uplifting and protecting the second space, you know, the ideas and the thoughts in the image of Black Nashville. And now how can we be intentional about creating this third space that is for Black Nashville, for even the larger Black community? It is intentionally inclusive of us, where we can center joy and healing in collective expression, in the sharing of ideas that are so necessary to recharge and be regenerative and move us forward.
Most definitely. And, you know, as folks in workplaces and all over the country have been discussing diversity, what a better way to move yourself forward on the subject than, you know, through a submission of some work for the Black Third Space. Now, the deadline is coming up when, Mia?
August 31st.
Oh, wow.
And all submissions go to our email address at Black Lives Matter Nashville at gmail.com.
Okay, and I forgot to ask you this, that specifically, the art can include what? Painting, but what else can it include?
So painting, video illustrations, drawings, poetry, even short essays or rants. I know someone had talks about wanting to submit some video clips, like comedic video clips, and to be. Oh, I know someone else was doing some hair and makeup looks, like. Hold on, guard, hair and makeup look. So it's really, really open. And I know that that is vague, and that can be really frustrating to people. Some people really want more guidelines. But I wanted to leave it very open, at least for this first round, because I wanted to see, you know, how much creativity we could pull in. And if we need to narrow it down next time.
Well, let me say that I'm thinking some of you all that were at some of the protests, y'all should have some really good photos. I mean, you took pictures of everybody around you and everything. You know, that would certainly go in there under digital. Anyway, thank you so much, Mia Jane. With Black Lives Matter Nashville. And is the submission information and form on your website, or should you do a what? How, best way?
Yes. So there is a post on our Instagram that has like the bullet point quick summary.
Yeah.
Or if you go to the link in our bio, it'll take you to the detailed, longer information.
Excellent. I hope that they do before the 31st. I'm going to check with you to find out if you had an increase in submissions, because I know there's a bunch of arts people in this town for sure.
Yeah, thank you so much for reaching out and for having me on.
Of course.
I really appreciate that.
I know you do, and I appreciate y'all. And much love to everybody, and thank you so much for this wonderful work that you're doing, okay?
Okay.
All right, Mia J. Black Lives Matter Nashville. They matter, they always have, and they always will. So y'all just might as well get over it. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Watching traffic really pick up the last few minutes here on the South Loop. There's a crash south Nashville, Harding Place at Tampa Drive, moving around 28th and Albion Street. That's North Nashville. It's starting to get busy, or busier, should I say, here on 40 East up by the airport through Hermitage and Donaldson. This traffic report is brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pike. That's princeshotchicken.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Tune in on Thursdays to hear WFSK's Artist of the Week. You can win some brand new music and stay up on the latest smooth and contemporary jazz releases. This week's WFSK Artist of the Week features Detroit's own composer and flutist Alexander Zonjic. His latest release is entitled Playing It Forward. Don't miss the WFSK feature Artist of the Week during the noon hour on Thursdays right here on Jazzy 88, Nashville's Jazz Station.
Wearing a mask fights COVID-19. I'm fighting to keep Tennesseans working.
I'm fighting for time with my friends.
I'm fighting for football on Saturday.
I'm fighting to see my students back in the classroom.
I'm fighting for small businesses.
I'm fighting to keep my family safe.
Until there's a vaccine for COVID-19, it's time for all Tennesseans to fight back by wearing a mask. Face it. Masks fight COVID-19.
Brought to you by the State of Tennessee, Tennessee Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
Some of the best sounds you'll ever hear are generic. Safe. Effective. Even money-saving. Just like FDA-approved generic drugs. Even if they don't come in the exact same color or shape as their brand name equivalents, they have the same key ingredients and go through a rigorous review process. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist today and visit fda.gov/generic drugs. Generics are safe, effective, and can save you money. You'll like the sound of that.
This has been a reminder from community-minded Jazzy 88 WFSK.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, to Nashville, Sharon Kay is. I'm in it. I'm telling you, I'm in it. I'm in the house, and mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK, Historic Fisk University. And, you know, X, I have to do this on a regular now, because sometimes, you know, this job requires me to work at a robot's pace, and I mean like quickly, like artificial intelligence sometimes. And I don't have time to practice and, you know, do all this kind of stuff. So,
sure.
X, it's Audrey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Audrey.
Oh, yeah, I'm talking to my producer, Audrey. Because, okay. Yeah, we were having this discussion a couple of hours ago. And I said, oh, Lord. I said, I think I done messed that sister. But, you know, she's just going to have to work with me and, you know,
yes.
God is good. So,
amen.
And I was just sharing with a couple other people how many times folks done tore my name up. But, you know, I have to move on. Anyway,
yes.
It's an unusual spelling. So,
yes, it is.
Now, thank you. So it's not me, y'all. Sometimes folks come in here with names spelled just so different. I mean, just out of the box. But Audrey, this is such a beautiful spelling for
your name.
Oh, it is. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Kind of remind me of India Ari. I mean, I was like, oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Then. Yeah. So how have you been today?
I've been fine. Very well. Very well. Looking forward to today.
Oh, good. Good.
Mm-hmm. Now, how have you been?
Oh, girl, staying as busy as a bee.
Yes.
You know, it's just like that right now during this time. But plus my helicopter blade on my head just goes constantly on high all the time because we got a lot.
Right.
We have a lot going on
yes.
here at WFSK. So I stay actively in it. Now, a lot of people may or may not be familiar with your work, your concept, and things that you have done. And I think being a book publishing expert lifts you up to a different category.
Thank you.
So, I mean, you know, it says expert. And in addition to that, apparently you know your way around words as a playwright, a film director, and CEO of 13th and Joan Publishing House. You have been working so hard, sister.
I have been working so very hard. There are some days, and you know, some days you feel like you've done a great job, and other days you feel like you haven't done enough. But
yes.
Hard work is what I know, so I don't run away from that.
Yes. Well, you and I could touch and agree right now today, because I'm like,
that's right.
You know, if I'm
that's
not,
right.
if I'm not, and when I say hard, I mean smart, because somebody one time a long time ago misinterpreted that. And I'm like, baby, right. I was ahead of the curve on smart, working smart.
And
thought I meant like a slave or something. I'm like, no. I'm using my brain, but I don't have headaches. Okay, does that make sense? Anyway, you are a celebrity ghostwriter. Oh, that sounds so much fun. How did you get into that?
You know, I did not even know that it was a thing. I just remember that my first time doing that was at the age of 10. I was removed from my classroom because I was that little girl who talked a lot in class. And so I think they really figured that they needed to give me something extra to do. So I was pulled out of class, and I had a teacher who told me that she wanted me to create something, and it could be whatever I wanted to create. Mm-hmm. She told me I could write, I could paint, I could do whatever. And so writing just came naturally. And I said, okay, great, I'm going to write something. So she continued to evolve that. What are you going to write about? Who are you going to write about? Mm-hmm. And at the time, I realized that in my community, I was raised in Gainesville, Florida. In that community, I felt like there was not a lot of black women role models who were front and center. Mm-hmm. I knew they existed in the community, but I was not sure that we all knew who they were. So I reached out to them. I started researching who they were, and I wrote about them. I interviewed them, and then I turned around and, you know, composed the information, mm-hmm. had a book signing. Mm-hmm. All the things that I actually do right now is what I did at the age of 10, which is a full circle moment.
Yeah.
So that was a seed that was planted. And then approximately maybe, you know, 20 years later, I resigned from my job as an assistant principal, and I came back to writing again, and mm-hmm. I wrote and published a book for myself. And then I did the same kind of concept where I interviewed people and I wrote as if I were them. Mm-hmm. And their reaction made me realize that there was something to what I had done. They mm-hmm. showed me that, you know, they were moved by me telling their stories. And many of them said, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I meant, but I wouldn't have known how to say it like mm-hmm. that, or, you know, so that let me know I was onto something. So shortly after I published that book, I got a call from a client who had a client who was starting a show on VH1, mm-hmm. and that show was going to be airing in about 2 months, and so they wanted me to get the book done in 30 days. And, you know, again, I had resigned from the job, but I had more time on my hands, and I took that challenge. Mm-hmm. And so that was the call from VH1, got more clients from VH1, and then it morphed into VH1 and MTV, WeTV, Centric, you know, Grammy Award-winning artists, mm-hmm. entertainers. So it just continued to go on. But I didn't know that that was ghostwriting until about 2 years after I had been doing it formally. I just knew that I was writing. People didn't know who I was, mm-hmm. and I was composing these books and pulling the stories from people to write their stories for them.
Mm. Wow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, may I say that I am happy to hear you say that it was in your younger day, and that pivotal moment was in school when you were a student. That mm-hmm. was such a trajectory. You know, that was almost as if the father was showing you the direction. Did you believe it at the time?
I did not. I did not at all. I wish that I, you know, could take credit for, you know, knowing, uh-huh. but I did not. And really my life took a different turn because uh-huh. I had been raised in a single parent home, and my mother and I were very close. And then shortly after I published that book, that was the end of my elementary school years, going into middle school, she mm-hmm. was involved in a very tumultuous marriage. There was a lot of domestic violence. So I really kind of set the writing aside, and I wrote things just to express, but I was really just doing that as a way to, you know, to get the feelings out, because mm-hmm. at that time it was like house business. You don't tell what's going on in your home, you know, especially when there's things like that that could be embarrassing. She was an upstanding woman in the community, so no one would have thought, you know, that mm-hmm. we were going through this. So I was just writing for therapy at that time. I did not know that it would lead me somewhere else. I certainly would have pursued
completely different path had I known that writing was where I was supposed to be.
Right.
And even after resigning from my job, I was still writing it. I didn't know that was exactly what I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I launched businesses. I launched brands. I, you know, fell flat in doing some of those efforts, and it was all learning experiences, so I don't, you know, regret any of it, but I did not know at the time.
Yeah.
I did realize, though, after I started getting different responses from people and the way that things took off, I knew that, you know, that was exactly where God would have me.
Well, I'm glad you recognized that, because if you didn't, you might not have seen that tremendous blessing that was given to you by somebody when you were so young. And because a lot of times people wonder, you know, how did this happen and what did that person do? They don't count. Mm-hmm. They don't count their blessings and the path that their life takes and their success.
Right.
They think they did it all by themselves, you know, and all that kind of craziness. And that really does move me to hear that, because I can touch and agree with you on something similar but not the same thing happened to me in grade school at Lincoln Elementary School in my hometown. And it was so bizarre, because I was getting in trouble for talking too much. And and everybody in the class had different levels of what they had to do, and so I had to come up with something creative, and and everybody, that all the popular people all picked each other to be in their little small groups of three, and nobody picked me and these two other people. I'm like, okay, tell me how y'all feel. And so that became my group. And they didn't know what to do. They were like, and I said, okay, let's do this. Let's write a commercial. And they looked at me like, we don't know how to do that. And I said, I didn't either. But we need to start with at least something. So I'll buy a candy bar.
Wow.
And you know, that work has stayed with me forever.
That's right.
Because in the media, that's all you do is describe things and write about them. And, you know, if you don't have any revenue coming in from the commercials, or the sponsors, you're done.
That's right. Absolutely.
So from that experience, you know, I wrote it was a Clark candy bar, and I, you know, we had to, you know, describe the wrapper and what it was like, and I let them have some so they could taste it, describe, you know, so we turned it into like a fun thing. And that was one of the things that you know, that's why I ask you that line of questioning, because I think that happens to people a lot in life, that they come upon these times and these moments that are so pivotal to them being whom they are today. And they don't, you know, think about that, because that was the turn your life took, and you stayed on that path ever since.
Yeah, I sure have. I have. It's a beautiful thing.
It really is. So that means you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. And you as well. You as well. I don't question it at all.
No.
You know, there are times where I may have to figure out which direction to go in, but I do not question at all if I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. I feel like one of the very blessed people to know exactly why I exist. It's a real treat to wake up every day and know that without question.
Yeah, because that haunting, that question thing will haunt you. There's many a person that I've talked to about that over the years in this process, interview process, that has mentioned, why am I here? Why am I there? Why God? Why did I end up at this place? Why did I go? You know, they spend years and years of trying to, you know, get a conclusion on that. Or should I still be here? Or should I move? I mean, you know, there's so many life decisions that that people have made on that. I'm glad that the success financially, and I'm just guessing, has come to you in such a way that your gift keeps giving.
Yes, I totally agree. It has made room. And, you know, there were times because I was not walking exactly where I was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. When I resigned from that position, there was a dash in between, and I launched a nonprofit because I thought that was my calling. Mm-hmm. You know, I was not going towards writing. I was just using writing and doing whatever I needed to do to write because it just came so naturally. I didn't think twice about it. Mm-hmm. So I agree.
Well, I'm, you know, that's why, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted you on today, the subject, yes, but getting to your gifting and enjoying it. Well, that's half the ride right there. For sure. And then the people that have been blessed as a result of your work. That makes it even better, especially with that laundry list of things that you named on the front end, and that's just at the tip of the iceberg. So I'm very grateful to have your time, and of course, and your attitude toward positivity, and as we will say it, y'all, make it do what it does. Sister Can.
That's right.
That's right. Yes. Sister Can. She can and she will. Audrey Ordy. She is the guest today, and when we come back from the show, I'm actually going to get into the subject, y'all. You know, I have to set the runway. Don't want any debris in the runway. I just want to, you know, get to the runway, get that straight. All lights are on. All wheels going in the right direction. Combating Racism Through Storytelling. Black publisher and social activist Audrey Ordy. Take the time out right now, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Starting to get really busy here on 65 up through Madison. South Nashville was still on the scene of that crash at Harding Place at Tampa Drive. Watching traffic build pretty good here by the airport through Hermitage, Donelson, continuing out towards Wilson County. It's also building now, leaving Nashville, headed out towards Murfreesboro. This traffic report is brought to you by Ripley's Aquarium in Gatlinburg. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we're in Rhode Island for a show of dynamite music from the Newport Jazz Festival through the years, handpicked and hosted by me, Christian McBride. We've got a power hour of all-stars with some of the best sets to come out of the modern era of the fest. Herbie Hancock, Roy Hargrove, Cecile McLaurin-Savant, and maybe a little bit of music from me. That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m., and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville. All righty, Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. I guess I should tell the guest that I'm having 52 conversations simultaneously. And because they're hearing me talk to the audience, they're hearing me talk to them, they're hearing me and X. I mean, sorry. because this has happened. This has happened. I had my collisions today, and I haven't stopped long enough to explain that. Our configuration in the studios is slightly different in that normally you wouldn't hear me except when I bring the show up. But because you are in it, this is in the room, you're hearing all my thoughts. So, you're hearing all, you're hearing the salt and sugar and the flour come together.
Got it.
I'm sorry. Anyway, hopefully, and what I had, one of the things I had mentioned, Audrey, during the earlier hour is storytelling as it relates to our community. That is exactly how we have always passed information on from generation to generation. And I do know that, are you part of a study or some kind of research around this topic? Because it seems like I read somewhere in Nashville that that one of the community groups was doing something similar to some kind of training or something on storytelling or whatever. Are you connected to that?
Not that exact movement, but we have created something exclusively for Black men because we have recognized, you know, a tremendous deficit when it comes to Black men and publishing. So that is a community effort that we have going on. Mm-hmm. And then we are launching one to help children become published authors, because with everything that's happening with, you know, COVID and students deciding to go back to school and parents having to make those decisions, we are launching something that is exclusive for children to become published authors.
So tell me a little bit more about that, please.
Okay. Which one, the Black men or the children?
The children.
Okay. So let's see. A year ago, I created a clothing line. It was an athleisure wear, and it's called True Story Thread. Mm-hmm. I created that so that I could use it to raise money for what would be a summer camp called We've Got Stories to Tell. Yeah. And that summer camp was to turn around and do the same thing for children ages 10 to 17 that was done for me, giving them the opportunity to create and directing that through writing. Mm-hmm. And then also teaching them the financial side of writing, because at the age of 10, when I had that book signing, and I made money from my book, and I can remember my mom coming into my room that evening, and she said, "Here's all of your money." Hmm. And I was like, "Well, what am I supposed to do with it?" And she said, "You earned it. This is from your book sales." Hmm. So I want the children to have that same access to the opportunity to create something one time and for it to continuously make money for you over time. So that We've Got Stories to Tell was supposed to launch this summer. However, with COVID and everything that has happened, we are shifting to a virtual model that we will be launching on this side of the year, so in 2020. Mm-hmm. So that's coming up very soon. And the clothing line still continues to thrive and function as a way for people to support it. So we're not saying, "Hey, make donations." We're saying, "Hey, the clothing line and the message, you know, behind it, we have statement tees and sweats and things like that." And then people are supporting this initiative.
Yeah. Well, it would seem to me like now what youth have to say is since they should not, for health purposes, go in large groups and this and that and the other, telling their story or writing it should be very therapeutic for them.
Yes.
As they experience the world change, the changes that are going on around them with the civil rights of today, Black Lives Matter, the things that are happening that have some of them never happened before. I'm certain there's some profound things that they would like to say.
Absolutely. And they are very wise. You know, they have seen a lot. Even in the last you know, 6 months, these children have seen a lot, they've grown a lot, they've mm-hmm. experienced something that has never happened before. So even with these experiences in this short amount of time, mm-hmm. they have something to say, and we need to continue to empower them so that they know their voices are important.
Have you seen any early samples or had any ideas of what some of them are telling you this far in advance about their stories?
You know, a lot of them, I have actually, right here in my house, I have a teenage daughter, and I had her work on a book of affirmations mm-hmm. and journaling, because if they're not talking, say, for example, to their parents, there's some things that they don't say. Mm. They need to be able to have a way to channel whatever it is that they're feeling. So that's one thing that I had her work on, and she expressed to me, you know, a lot of what she feels, she internalizes. She doesn't express it in complaining or, you know, that there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of internalized. So yeah. having this diary, this journal, is an opportunity to get through that. My youngest daughter, we have worked on a book called London for President. Mm-hmm. That one is dealing with politics, and it's about a young girl who does not understand why a woman has not been elected for the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they are thinking about all the same things that we're thinking about. And mm-hmm. as much as we want to protect them, they think and feel and hear and see. And so they're very aware. And mm-hmm. that's why they have much to talk about. We have some who are working on Black Lives Matter related things, you know, mm-hmm. things related to race. There are some children who, for the very first time in their lives, don't know what they think about the police, or mm-hmm. they have negative feelings about the police mm-hmm. when they've always, you know, thought that police were people who were there to help. So there is so much to be dealing with mm-hmm. and be thinking through. And so we know that writing is a place where we can create a safe haven for the expression of these emotions
yeah.
and thoughts.
And that mm-hmm. is so important. So you don't have mm-hmm. to carry them on your back like a suitcase. You can uh-huh, you can get uh-huh. them off of you so that you can move on. Now, also I've noticed of recent, there are a lot of young ones that are becoming entrepreneurs and telling their story uh-huh. through products, you know, uh-huh. with different types of clothing things that they relate uh-huh. to their generation, and artwork and different things of that nature. So you uh-huh. see this combating racism through multiple streams or multiple ways that uh-huh. Young people are speaking out. When you mentioned, and I, you know, this was interesting to me, that you felt like men, for somebody like myself that's interviewed thousands of authors, that men are underrepresented in terms of books. And uh-huh. I have found that women are not represented. So that's interesting that you would come to that conclusion, because as I think back, you know, and it wasn't purposely done uh-huh. when I selected uh-huh. the guests, but probably 70% of the authors I have had on have been male.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
And very glad to hear.
Yeah.
It.
And that wasn't what I was. Number. Yeah. That uh-huh. wasn't. I wasn't specifically saying that. I uh-huh. I mean, uh-huh. because I didn't say I'm just going to get this, or I'm just. I don't go to that. I'm trying to address empowerment and encouragement.
Uh-huh.
And uh-huh. you know, it just seems like women weren't getting the deals, and either that or they weren't getting paid or any of the other number of things, or weren't being taken seriously on deeper subjects. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure.
So when the brothers are speaking and the men are speaking, are they just only African-American males, or are you hearing from other cultures and other races?
So we are definitely hearing from other cultures and other races. However, I created this particular program exclusively for black men.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually in response to the Fidel Castro video, which was a terrible, terrible moment in our history, you know, that is a reality that we have continued to see. But when I watched that video, I just felt a sense of helplessness. And, you know, I continued to try to figure out how I could be a thug. What could I do? How could I, you know, help our men? I have a black husband. I have a black son. What can I do to make a difference?
Right.
And when I looked at our clientele as the fastest growing black-owned publishing house, 85% of our clientele was women. Then I started to do some research and dig in the industry. And we did some more, you know, kind of outreach. One story in particular that stuck with me was a gentleman who sent me staff of his denial letters from more traditional publishing houses. And they told him essentially that there was not a market for what he wanted to write. There was no one who would really be interested in reading. And what he had written about was being a black father. So we understand why that's necessary for that story to be told and for to see, you know, examples of that. But he was told from a mainstream perspective that there was no need for that, no desire for it. So immediately for me, I thought, well, if, you know, there are targets on black men's back, what happens to those stories? How many men have had scenarios where they live to tell the story but never told it? How many men are suppressing, you know, emotions because society has said, you know, deal with it, move forward? All of the stories of times where men have been held unjustly with police. There's so much, you know, to that. And so women, not being stereotypical, but we have been provided a space where we feel comfortable to speak, right? There is a floor for us. Now, do we always feel heard? Absolutely not. Do we feel protected? There are, you know, many things that we can talk about to that end. But women have been conditioned to speak. Men, black men, not nearly as much. So I thought, okay, I'm going to move forward with this publishing initiative. And when I did so, when we opened the applications and the process, the floodgates and the numbers of men who, you know, still say, thank you so much. We didn't have this. No one was listening to us. We're so thankful just to be able to say anything or for someone to say that what we are saying is important broke my heart. And I knew that, you know, my observation was not off by any stretch of the measure. So we've exceeded our goal with having the 100 men. That was the goal. My commitment was to 100. And we have broken them down into cadres. And so we're just working with these groups of men to get their story to market.
That's excellent. That is wonderful. And hopefully from that experience, someone can gain knowledge and insight and move from the place where they are to a much better place. You say in your work that storytelling is an art. Can you just talk about that for 1 second, please?
Sure. You know, I have not been to school for storytelling. It is just my call to action. It is my divine calling, my divine purpose. And so after writing that way for many years, I always write, I always practice, I always, you know, learn all the new information that I can learn. But there are so many things from a structural position that we are not aware of. Something as simple as what's referred to in the industry as the hero's journey. Every movie, every screenplay, books, all of these things that are from a creative disposition follow the hero's journey, or they should follow the hero's journey. And so it really is about deconstructing all of the components that should be in a good story, that make a good story. And then, you know, it's almost like with a paintbrush or with your pen, using it as a wand to craft what it is that you want the reader to feel. A lot of times, we might have an agenda as a creative person. You might say, okay, I really want people to think about how racism has affected us in the country. But you can't get someone to think before you get them to feel. when you get them to feel, then you, you know, can insert anything that you want them to be thinking. Mm-hmm. And so the art of it is really being intentional, you know, and understanding how much power you have as a storyteller. You have the power to teach. You have the power to inspire. You have the power to engage. You have the power to call to action. You have the power to, you know, channel any emotion. So it is all an art form. But yeah, the thing that I really want people to understand is that our words have power. Amen. You know, those words can be monetized. Those words can move culture. You know, those words can shape thought processes, yeah, for future generations. Those words can create blueprints that we leave behind. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important that we know the power of our stories and that we tell them versus allowing them to be told to us.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you sure told it today. And I am very, very appreciative of that, because it's just been a part of who human beings are and have been. And we wouldn't know our history if our ancestors hadn't told stories and written things down as they were able and, you know, shared with us what was going on. We would be as confused as we could possibly be. So thank God for that. And I appreciate you so much that this has really been so interesting and so good. So I got your number, but I do want to say, I know I'm almost out of time, but I do have at least 45 seconds. When this week during the Democratic National Convention and the other conventions, uh-huh, historically, it's been the stories that have moved the people to make the vote. Uh-huh. Can you just describe that for a moment as we close up?
Absolutely. So it goes back to stories and emotion first. During the convention, and I'm certain that it will be the same at the Republican National Convention, but during the Democratic National Convention, this last day that aired where Michelle Obama spoke, or the day that she did, you know, what she appealed most to was emotion. She spoke a great deal about, you know, the country and its state. She spoke a great deal about being led by someone whose ethics you feel safe with, you feel comfortable with, someone who's making decisions on your behalf. So much of what she appealed to was not just about the other person. It was all emotion, how you feel as a parent and, you know, the state of the safety of the country and all of those things. And so everyone who is speaking, and again, you will see this same thing happen, the appeal is to emotion first. If you leverage the power to get people to feel, then you have the opportunity, the open door, to insert whatever it is that you want them to think. And so that is the way of the world. Stories are happening around us. Stories are used to control everything. And so when you think about a storyteller, you think, wow, that's probably not the most high-paying job. But what it leads to is people making decisions based on information. But the only way that you would have appealed to them to give them information is that they feel first. So again, stories were what led this convention. And even as the delegates were going around and doing the introductions, the roll call, they all inserted a small piece of story. You find story everywhere.
That's why people loved it so much. Yeah, that's why they loved it so much. Well, I thank you so much. See, I got you locked in my phone here. So, you
thank
know,
you.
Just recognize, you see 615, you'll know it's me.
Absolutely. I will thank you.
I love this conversation. It has been wonderful. Audrey Ory, please be sure and go to her website, check out all her materials, etc. What's the best way to reach over to you, Audrey?
Absolutely. You can find me on all social media at I Am Audrey Ory, and that is ArdreOrie. And also my website is IamAudreyOrie.com. And then the publishing house is 13th and Jones, 13THANDJOAN, Facebook.com, and we're 13th at Joan on all social media.
Well, thank you so much. This was enjoyable for sure. And you have been a blessing. And please continue up this great job that you are doing.
Thank you. The very same to you. And thank you so much for allowing me this time.
Absolutely. That's all we have for you, Nashville. Oh, we're going to have some emotion when the Republican convention comes. Oh, yes. And then no question. Anyway, you all have the very best of the best. And don't forget who loves you.
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.